What a blessing it is to be here. Let me begin by asking you a question. Have you ever read a book? When you got done, you were left without really any good feelings. I mean, you were left confused. You were left maybe even disappointed, maybe even angry. Raise your hand if you ever read a book like that. You got to the end and you thought, what? Maybe the book had a confusing ending. Maybe that's why you're left confused. Maybe a main character's dilemma did not resolve the way that you think that it should. Maybe there was a good character in the book. You thought, what a neat character to throw in. And all of a sudden they die unjustly, unexpectedly. That just leaves a bad taste in your mouth. Maybe you felt someone should give aid to the main character, but that help never comes. In fact, maybe there are people that should give that help that end up just making things worse. Or maybe you're just left with all kinds of unanswered questions about the book. Let me ask again, how many of you have ever read a book like that? Raise your hand again. I would hope that you have read a book like that, because there's a book like that right in our Bible. You might have guessed we were going to do that this morning. There's a book in our Bible called the Book of Job. Now, when you look at an overview of the Old Testament books and you see how they're classified, you know what I mean by that? Law, history, prophecy. Job, interestingly, is often classified as a wisdom book, right? There, in fact, it's positioned in our order of books, right along with the other wisdom books. Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon. Not that Job took place at that same time chronologically, because it's believed Job lived much, much, much earlier. But it's classified as a wisdom book, and I think that's appropriate. Because it's a book that gives wisdom. It gives perspective, and it gives perspective about a really hard subject. And you know what that subject is? The subject of human suffering. It understates the truth, doesn't it? To say that Job suffered. That's almost just not saying enough about what happened to this man. It's almost not enough to say that this man fell into hard times. In fact, let me kind of talk about that. I suspect many of you are familiar with his story, but let me suggest to you that the hard times that Job faced are only magnified when you consider the tremendous gulf between the way his life was and the way his life ended up when he was down in the pit. When you consider how great Job's life was before that, that magnifies his sufferings. So I want to begin in Job chapter 1, and I wanted to remind us just how good Job's life was. We begin in verse 1, where it says, "There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was blameless, upright, fearing God, turning away from evil. 7 sons and 3 daughters were born to him." You may consider that a blessing, you may not. Leave that to you. Verse 3, "His possessions also were 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and very many servants. And that man was the greatest of all the men of the east." Verse 4, "His sons used to go and hold a feast in the house of each one on his day, and they would send and invite their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. And when the days of feasting had completed their cycle, Job would send and consecrate them, rising up early in the morning and offering burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, 'Perhaps my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts.' Thus Job did continually." You see the picture? Picture perfect life, if we look at it in broad strokes. A man pleasing to God. I hope that's important to you. A man who's well respected by others around him. Great family man. 10 children. And did you catch in the text? They seem to get along really well, Danny. They had this rotation set up where they would meet in the houses of the 7 different sons. How cool is that? What parent does not want their adult children to get along really well? I think every parent would want that, and Job had that. And Job is their father. He's taking a very active role, helping them to continue to live holy lives before God, worshiping constantly, praying constantly on their behalf. Job's doing all the right things. Bible says he had many possessions. You know, we haven't even gotten to that yet. And for many people, that's where it starts. You know, you have a great life, that means you have great possessions. Well, Job had that too. In verse 3, you can read about that. So here's a great life, great man. And he was a great man. You ever hear athletes or other people today talk about how great they are? Kind of rubs you the wrong way. Now, Job never claimed that, but he could have. And he could back it up. But he didn't claim it. I want you to think about this. God said it about him. I can't think of anything higher to aspire to in life. For God to say, you are great. He said that, end of verse 3. He was the greatest man in the East. Now, if you're familiar with this story at all, you know that it doesn't stay this good. In fact, it's going to change very quickly. And those hard times we know come, they come very suddenly, in a flash. Job's going to be stripped bare of virtually every earthly blessing. And so we skip down now to verse 13. It says, now on the day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. So we know where they're at in the rotation. They're eating and drinking at the oldest brother's house. And on that day, notice, all this happens in one day. And then all of the people from different places come and report this to Job all at once. Verse 14, a messenger came to Job and said, the oxen were plowing, the donkeys feeding beside them. The Sabaeans attacked and took them. They also slew the servants with the edge of the sword. I alone have escaped to tell you. Verse 16, while he was still speaking, another also came and said, the fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I alone have escaped to tell you. And then verse 17, while he was still speaking, you notice that phrase appears several times in this text. Another also came and said, the Chaldeans formed three bands, made a raid on the camels, took them and slew the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you. Can you imagine being Job, by the way? Verse 18, while he was still speaking. You kind of wish that this reporting would have ended after verse 17. Another also came and said, your sons and your daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And behold, a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house, and it fell on the young people, and they died. And I alone have escaped to tell you. He lost his possessions, his wealth, his livelihood, his servants, his kids, all 10 of them. Later on in chapter 2, he loses his health. So it's understating the truth to say that Job was hit by hard times. This man was hit by several devastating blows, any one of which would have undone lesser men. So one of the big lessons that this book does give us right off the bat, one piece of wisdom that we learn from this story is that no one's immune from suffering. No one. No one who's righteous. There are times when even good people suffer. By the way, an aside about that, the biblical worldview never denies that reality. In fact, it predicts it and explains it. Now, I wish I could say that Job's burdens were limited to what we've mentioned already. Someone says, you mean it got worse? Yes. It got worse. Because there were things that made the hard times harder. Some realities that made the burdens more burdensome. I would call them hard realities about hard times. You see, as this is all new, you're kind of checking to see, okay, is that showing up all right? Hard realities about hard times. And this morning, I want to talk about what some of those were. Someone's thinking, wow, Mark, I can't wait to hear the rest of this lesson. You know, first Sunday service in the new auditorium, and you're talking about this. Why do I need to hear this? Well, there's value in it. the value of the book of Job goes beyond teaching us the basic truth that we will have hard times. It goes beyond making us aware that being godly doesn't exempt us from suffering. I mean, it's not like Monopoly where you get a get-out-of-suffering-free card. One of the big things that the book of Job helps us with is how to cope when hard times ensue, and further, when we are stripped bare of some things that we think could have helped us. Things that we think perhaps we might rely on to provide some comfort in the trial, something to help us manage the trial, help us bear the burden. So Job gives us wisdom from when life not only gets hard, but for when it gets harder. When certain hard realities, we're calling them, about those hard times begin to set in, with the result that our faith is pushed right to the brink. That's what the book of Job helps us with. Because many people lose their faith when these hard realities set in. But I'm here to tell us this morning that doesn't have to happen. In fact, if we understand the book of Job, we'll understand there is ultimately, hear me, there's ultimately only one thing that matters the most when we are where Job is at. In knowing that one thing, we can, as Job did, reach the other side of our trials with our faith not only intact, but strengthened. I didn't promise this would be an easy lesson. It's going to be a very challenging lesson. And you may be wrestling with some things I say as we go through. I just beg of you to hear me out and examine this from your own Bible. I want to talk about some of these hard realities. And then at the end, I want to talk about why it was Job was able to overcome them. So I want you to be thinking about what that one thing is that helped Job overcome. Okay, so I have my work up here. You have your assignment. Let's go. What were some of these hard realities? Here's one of them. Actually, I'm going to give you four this morning. One of the realities is this, is that God may let it continue. Now, this point originally was worded to focus on Satan. Satan certainly was the architect behind Job's hard times. A careful reading of Job chapter 1, verses 8 through 12 will make that very clear. It was Satan who sought Job's harm. Satan who unmercifully exercised all the power he had to inflict such unimaginable heartache on this godly man. And then, he wasn't done. After the hard times began, after Job's children and health and wealth and dignity were taken away from him, after he was driven, the Bible says, to tear his robe and shave his head, and he's brought to his knees, the devil goes back to God and makes more accusations and seeks to do more. He is a cruel multitasker. He went back to God and sought more. And there's a contrast here between God and Satan. God allows trials, to bring out the best in us. Satan, though, seeks to capitalize on them to bring out the worst in us. And when given the opportunity, that's exactly what Satan tried to do. And his assault continued. He afflicted Job's health. We've mentioned that. You can see that in the early part of chapter 2. And so through Satan's efforts, Job's suffering became worse. It continued. And that is something to consider when we're suffering. Ladies and gentlemen, I think Satan typically garners much less blame than he ought when it comes to our suffering. Oh, people blame God. Not too many people blame Satan. And I just have to believe that's exactly the way Satan drew it up in his playbook. So this point really had Satan in the wording, but look, folks, there's no getting around this. God allowed this to happen. Yeah, we're going to go there a little bit. In fact, in the last chapter of Job, in Job 42 and verse 11, you'll find this language. It talks about all the adversities which the Lord had brought upon him. Now, that requires some unpacking that we can't do right now. That is to be understood in a certain way. But that's what the text says, at least in my Bible. I don't know what it says in yours. Yes, God restrained Satan. He did limit what he could do to Job, and most certainly God allowed all of this for greater beneficial purposes. In fact, not just for Job, but for us. So this isn't meant at all to be accusative toward God. Far be it from me. But it simply is a reality. And for us, a very hard one. That sometimes in the midst of hard times, in the midst of suffering, God may choose not to intervene when we pray for deliverance, and he may, in fact, let it continue. It may get worse in your marriage, in your finances, with your health, in your parenting, maybe at work. Here's the question. What do we do then? What do we do? For some, their faith completely erodes away when things get worse. They blame God. They become disillusioned. They become disappointed to the point of quitting God. And I think it would be useful to consider why Job's faith ultimately did not follow that pathway. It did not in chapter 1 of Job. I know I've got you flying all over the book of Job, but in Job 1 verse 22 it says, through all this, Job did not sin, nor did he blame God. So what's the difference between Job and so many other people, some of which you know, you could put names and faces to, who lost their faith when God let it continue? What's the difference? That's what I'm asking you to think about as we go through this. Job no doubt was confused. He had questions. I started developing a list of passages that demonstrate that he had questions, that he wanted it all to stop. I'm going to leave it for you to go and discover those in the text. There are several. The point, though, we want to make, go to chapter 6, is that Job didn't lose his faith. Job 6, verse 8, oh, that my request might come to pass and that God would grant my longing. One of his longings, by the way, is that he had died when he was born. Would that God were willing to crush me. In other words, get it over with. That he would loose his hand and cut me off. Been there? Verse 10, but it is still my consolation, and I rejoice in unsparing pain. Catch that wording. That I have not denied the words of the Holy One. How does that happen? Think about that. Here's another hard reality. Not only may it be the case that God will let it continue, we may find along the way that people may disappoint us as we encounter hard times, and that this will make the hard times harder. And that's really what the majority of the text in Job demonstrates, right? When you think of Job, you may think of all of these conversations, because most of Job is devoted to the back and forth exchange which takes place between Job and his three friends. We'll call them that. Now look, I suspect, in fairness, I suspect these four men were very, very close. I don't know how far away they lived from each other. I suspect it wasn't right down the street. And by the way, this was before airlines and points, Linda. I'll tell you what, only true friends would do what they did when they first heard of the calamity that came upon Job in chapter 2. Chapter 2, verse 11. Now when Job's three friends heard of all this adversity that had come upon him, they came each one from his own place. Eliphaz the Temanite, I guess we do get an idea about where they lived, based upon what they're called. Bildad the Shuhite, Zophar the Naamathite, and they made an appointment together to come to sympathize with him and to comfort him. Verse 12, when they lifted up their eyes at a distance and did not recognize him, they raised their voices and wept. Each of them tore his robe and they threw dust over their head toward the sky. You talk about grieving with those who grieve. They did that. Then they sat down on the ground with him. Not, here, let's find you a chair. They sat on the ground with him for 7 days and seven nights with no one speaking a word to him, for they saw that his pain was very great. So for 1 week, they truly supported him, right? By the way, that's more than other friends and loved ones did. They surely disappointed Job. In fact, you go to the end of in chapter 42 again, you find all of these other people, they come and comfort him, and perhaps doing so with a measure of guilt that they hadn't done so before. And in chapter 19, you find Job just distraught over the fact that, where are these people in my life? He had more friends than just these three. So at least these three did for him what several other loved ones did not do. That must have been disappointing that those other people didn't come. And then how disappointing as Job is processing his grief. And when you're processing your grief, what do? A lot. You vent. You express. And then it's at this point, all of these three friends feel this compelling need to say something. Mistake number one, they didn't need to say anything. But they did, and their words only proved to add to Job's burden. Just going to give you a couple of samples, but Job chapter 4, verse 7, let's look at what Eliphaz says. Job 4, verse 7, he says, "Remember now, whoever perished being innocent." Think about the question he's asking and what he's implying. "Whoever perished being innocent, where were the upright destroyed? According to what I have seen, those who plow iniquity and those who sow trouble harvest it." Have you heard that cause and effect relationship preached? In general, sowing and reaping. What are they saying? He's trying to explain Job's suffering, and the explanation was, Job, you've sinned. You are reaping what you have sown. God is angry with you. Not to be outdone, there's Bildad in chapter 8 and verse 3. We'll just read one other example. He says, "Does God pervert justice? Or does the Almighty pervert what is right?" Now hear this. "If your sons sinned against him," you think he's not going there. Oh, yes, he is. "If your sons sinned against him, then he delivered them into the power of their transgression." Job wasn't the only one who suffered here. He was the only one left alive from it. Well, Job's wife too. Bildad tells Job that his dead children were dead because of their own sin. What kind of friend says that? Job didn't need reproof at the moment. He needed comfort. He needed companionship. He clearly felt the weight of disappointment at their behavior at this time when he most needed their help. Chapter 6, verse 26. "Do you intend to reprove my words when the words of one in despair belong to the wind?" He's like, "I'm grieving. Cut me some slack. You would even cast lots for the orphans and barter over your friend. You kick a guy when he's down," because that's what they were doing. Chapter 13, verse 4. He says, "You smear with lies. You are all worthless physicians. Oh, that you would just be completely silent and that it would become your wisdom." Chapter 16, verse 2. "I have heard many such things," and he gets right to it, "sorry comforters are you all." Chapter 19, verse 2. "How long will you torment me and crush me with words?" These 10 times. I mean, at some point, it's like, how many times are they going to do this? He begins counting. "These 10 times you have insulted me. You're not ashamed to wrong me." You see the disappointment? I'm sure Job never expected his friends to react this way, but they did. At the moment he needed them more than ever, they disappointed him. And of course, you may be familiar with the fact that even Job's wife let him down. Curse God and die. Hard lesson. But we need to understand. The book of Job shows us there may be times in our life when life is hard and we turn for help to people we trust. And we don't get the help that we need. In fact, our friends and loved ones may, unintentionally, but may make things worse. Sometimes they flat out betray us and fail the true test of friendship, but sometimes they may be ignorant of what we're really going through, or they're well-intentioned but simply don't give us what we expected. In any event, I don't know that the bottom line's any different. We are disappointed, to say the least, when people that ought to know better end up letting us down. Listen, that can push someone's faith to the brink. And yet, Job shows us that we can overcome even that. He overcame his friend's failure. In fact, you ready for this? Go to chapter 42. Check this out. Job would later find the capacity to serve as the kind of friend to them that they needed in their moment of adversity. Chapter 42 and verse 7, you remember what happens with these three friends? God confronts them and says, "You have not spoken of me what is correct," which is an uh-oh moment. Now they stand condemned before their Maker. And so now how will they be delivered? Well, guess who God wants to pray for them? Verse 8, "Therefore take yourselves seven bulls and seven rams, and go to my servant Job and offer up a burnt offering for yourselves, and my servant Job will pray for you." That's the kind of man he was. Remember chapter 1? He prays for people. "I will accept him so that I will not do with you according to your folly, because you've not spoken of me what is right." Verse 9, "So Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad, Zophar, they went and did as the Lord told them, and the Lord accepted Job." In other words, Job prayed for them. He was a true friend to them. So Job didn't come out of this bitter, did he? To be kind of catchy, he came out of this better. He didn't quit God because his friends didn't come through. He came out compassionate and kind and victorious. And again, I ask, how does that happen? How? You still thinking about that? Here's another reality. Maybe the case along the way that answers we seek may escape us. I don't know about you. I still sometimes find myself reading this book and wanting God to explain to Job why. Why did all of this happen? I mean, you think about all that Job went through, from all the suffering inflicted on him to the questions that brought to his mind, having to endure the mistreatment he received from his own friends. It would seem fair from a human perspective that Job at least gets some answers. I find myself wanting the story of Job to include some of that by the time it's over. And I'll tell you what, though, in all 42 chapters, you check me out. I don't accept what I say on face value. Check me out. I find none of that. You never find God telling Job what readers of chapters 1 and 2 know, the backstory as to why his suffering happened at all. Instead, God does, I could correct this, God does give one answer to Job. And the last several chapters contain it. Chapters 38, 39, 40, and 41. No, we are not going to read all of that this morning. I'm going to sum it up right now. No answers to his questions, no explanations, just "I'm God." Period. And maybe a subtitle would be, "And I've got this." Would you be okay with that? Hard lesson, isn't it? I said this is a book of wisdom. That's a lesson we must learn. Sometimes life's going to hit us between the eyes and we want to know why. Sometimes a loved one suffers. Maybe even because of the ungodly actions of another, and we feel violated and we feel used, whatever, and we want answers. And in those times, we may find that answers to explain it all can just be downright elusive. Because look, there are many possible reasons why someone can suffer. We're not unpacking all that this morning. But we may never know which reason it is. Good news? I'm trying to give you that with every point. Job was able to overcome even that. What is it with this guy? He was able to overcome not having the answers that he no doubt wanted. Didn't lose his faith. He didn't let it go over the cliff because his questions went unanswered. Ultimately, he had confidence that God would see him through no matter what. Chapter 16, verses 19 and 20. Even now, behold, my witness is in heaven, and my advocate is on high. My friends are my scoffers. My eye weeps to God. You see it? So why? Think about that. You still thinking about it? How could he overcome? And then let's add one more. It may be another thing that makes the hard times harder is that they just don't stop while we're alive. Trials may last a lifetime. Someone says, I thought the story of Job had a happy ending. Yeah, you could say it does. Chapter 42, let's read about it. You need a little bit of positive news here from this dark story. It is to be found if you search for it. Job 42, verse 12, the Lord blessed the latter days of Job more than his beginning, and he had 14,000 sheep and 6,000 camels and 1,000 yoke of oxen and 1,000 female donkeys. And if you're keeping score and go back to chapter 1, you'll find that's twice what he had before. Then verse 13, he had 7 sons and 3 daughters. So arguably he has twice as many children. Yes, 10 are deceased. We'll get to that. But 7 sons and 3 daughters. In fact, you go on and you read about them. These daughters are beautiful. Verse 16, after this, Job lived 140 years and saw his sons and his grandsons 4 generations. How cool. So is that your great anyway? Grandchild sitting on your knee. Oh, I can wait for grandkids, but I hear it's really cool. You guys tell me about it sometimes. Happy ending, right? And yet when I read this story, I still find myself a little dissatisfied. Yeah, he had twice as much wealth, yada, yada, yada. Lived long enough to see 4 generations of his descendants, but I don't think Job ever outlived the heartache. Chapter 42 and verse 11 shows us that he still needed sympathy and comfort from family and friends because those 10 children he lost at the beginning were not raised from the dead. Job bore the burden of their loss for the rest of his life. And did I mention he lived a long time? And we may experience the fact is lifelong pain, and I don't need to go there. I don't need to tell you that. You're living it, some of you. And yet, done this with the other 3 points, Job lived his entire life faithful. And what a legacy. In Ezekiel 14, God mentions 3 people who are so righteous. Noah, Daniel, and he mentions Job, remembered forever as the man who overcame. Why would he do that? Why should we do that? More to the point, why stay faithful if God lets it get worse or continue, if people disappoint, if answers are missing, and if suffering lasts a lifetime? What if those hard realities are part of our story and make our burden even greater? Conclusion, because of what Job knew about God. And we don't have time to unpack all of that because we're probably done. Okay, we're close. But the book of Job is about God. If someone had no other reason to remain faithful to God than God himself, isn't that what's happening in the book of Job? Wasn't that that's what Satan thought? If I take this away, you'll curse God. I take this away. He takes everything away, and it's just him and God. God made the difference. And if that's all you have, my friend, then you have more than sufficient reason to remain faithful. We need to say that. Even though God granted Satan permission to afflict Job, and although God did not make Job privy to that, Job recognized something, that he had all the evidence he needed to know that God is loving, that God is compassionate, and that God is faithful. God has a purpose in suffering, even if we don't know what it is. And that purpose cannot be thwarted. And oh, by the way, this story does connect to Christ. story of Job teaches us things closely aligned with the gospel, and I believe God used Job's story to foreshadow them. The power of faith and endurance, the abundant mercy and compassion of God is seen in the restoration of Job's fortunes, the power and willingness of God to rescue and restore and to reward, and to teach us that anything in this life pales in importance when you lay it beside eternity. Remember what James said? Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial, for when he stood the test, he will receive the crown of life which God has promised to those who love him. So I say to you this morning, if you are in sin, you are in a state far worse than anything Job found himself in. Because of the mercy and because of the intervention of God, he wants to do the same for you this morning. The question is, will you let him? He wants the last chapter of your story to be a victorious one. But it's up for you to answer the question, what will that chapter read like? You need to become a Christian this morning. We urge you to do that. If you're a disciple and you're struggling and you need our prayers, we urge you to seek those right now while we stand, while we sing.